This Honorable Supreme Court is reconvened. I know what we love. Please be seated.
Case number SCWC-18-10 in the interest of AB. Arguing for petitioner, Mr. Peter L. Steinberg. Arguing for respondent, Mr. Ian T. Tsuda, Deputy Attorney General. Argument on the merits.
All right, good morning, Mr. Steinberg. Mr. Tsuda, are you both ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
And you both asked for a warning with 5 minutes to go in your argument, so we will provide it.
Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices. I am Peter Steinberg, speaking on behalf of Petitioner K.L., who's sitting there in the green dress. I would like to read a brief opening statement. I hope that I can present your case in a clear and convincing manner. There are so many questions for which she deserves answers. Does she have substantive family rights as a Hanai mother? As resource caregiver, did she have standing to move for a hearing on change of placement? Did she have a superior claim to custody pursuant to HRS section 57146A2? If she had any of these rights, it is clear that she was not given a fair opportunity to defend them. Under HRS section 587A4, a Hanai relative becomes a relative when the court or the department determines that she is willing and able to safely provide support to the child and the child's family.
Provide the citation again, I'm sorry.
578A, that's the definition section of the chapter. The July 6, 2016 order placing AB in foster care with my client, who is referred to in the order as Hanai relative, meets this definition. The department issued a license to my client for a child-specific resource home to enable this order after having KL take a psychological exam, which appears in the Safe Family Home report filed on May 24, 2016, Record on Appeal Volume 1, Item 36, at pages 527 to 534. That license and the court order made KL an authorized agency as defined in HRS section 587A4.
Mr. Steinberg, didn't your client already get from the Intermediate Court of Appeals, they already remanded it for a new hearing, right?
They did not provide the complete relief, and I would like to describe the issue of substantive rights. The issues that I asked this court to review, the issues for which you granted certiorari, are the issues I wish to address with my opening statement. The November 2nd, 2016 permanent plan also expressed the department's conclusion that my client was able and willing to provide for AB and wished to adopt her. That's Record on Appeal, Volume 1, Item 43, at pages 616 to 621. This is the permanent plan that stated AB is very happy in her current placement and has expressed to DHS that she would like to remain in KL's care. On September 7, 2017, at the hearing on the motion to intervene, the Deputy Attorney General stated in court that the department looked at my client as a relative, not just a Hanai relative, equally with AB's blood relative. That's docket 27, page 9, lines 9 to 10. The guardian ad litem acknowledged that KL was a Hanai relative standing in the same shoes as a blood relative. That's docket 27, page 9, lines 19 to 14. At the same hearing, the court stated, at least it's good to know that AB has relatives, whether blood or not, Hanai or not, that all love her and want what's in her best interests. Docket 27, page 10, lines 23 to 25. AB's September 22, 2016 essay, Good Things, Bad Things, also documents the existence of a mother-daughter relationship between KL and AB. That's Record on Appeal, Volume 1, Item 97, at pages 914 to 916. AB never changed her mind prior to July 13, 2017, as shown by the May 16, 2017 fax message from her therapist to the department social worker and the guardian ad litem. That's Record on Appeal, Volume 1, Item 123, at pages 1114 to 1115, when she declared that her home was with KL and rejected moving to another state.
So the social worker in that appeared to have doubts about KL's ability to provide a stable home, or a challenge that she had faced earlier in the year, later in 15, with AB. Could you address that issue and whether that was relevant to the court's consideration of these matters when it came before?
Well, my response, Justice Rechtenwald, is that the court didn't consider anything. And my client dealt with that specifically in her written declaration, which she read on July 13th, explaining there had been a time when there was a conflict, but they had worked it through. That was back in December. We're talking about in May, AB is quite clear who her mother is, where she wants to live.
On but in July the consideration, 13th, I'm sorry, Chief Justice.
No, please go ahead.
In consideration of the appropriate place to place the youth, isn't it appropriate to look at the history involved and what the care provided by KL in the past? And at one point in time, she asked for respite care, right?
Your Honor, Justice Nakiyev, the question of how much significance to put on that incident, which was 6 months prior to the transfer, should have been a matter for a hearing.
Didn't KL, hadn't she just personally undergone a kind of a dramatic event in her own life around that time juncture, your client, which might help explain why there was this brief...
Speaking outside of the record, what happened was...
Well, I don't want to speak outside of the record. I thought it was... when I'm referring
to... It's in the record.
It's in the record is what I'm referring to.
Her problem was the disruption caused by contact with the birth mother, and there was a...
That's not what I'm referring to. And what I'm referring to is that there may have been a viable explanation of why there was this certain point for those 10 days that she asked to get a little recess because of something that had happened in her own personal life.
No, that was not in her own personal life. That was a conflict between her and the issues involving discipline and resistance from AB. But I would like to say these would be questions that could have been addressed if the family court judge had exercised her judgment in denying relief to my client. But she simply endorsed the actions of the department. She didn't. When my client asked for a hearing, the judge just said, thank you. Was that consistent with this court's ruling in AFs? The department and the guardian ad litem withheld from the court relevant information about AB's desire to stay with my client.
At some point, excuse me, I'm sorry, Mr. Steinberg. At some point in time, and I understand that the ICA has ordered a hearing, but at some point in time in one of the hearings, I recall the family court was very... lenient in allowing your client to get up and address her concerns and her needs.
Well,
so she wasn't denied her say, was she?
She was
spent quite a bit of time talking.
Okay. There is, that relates to the question of whether, as resource caregiver, did my client have a right to ask not just to be heard on input, but to have the hearing she requested. She requested a stay of the change of placement. She requested the opportunity to get a lawyer. She requested a hearing on whether this change of placement was, in fact, in AB's best interest.
She wanted to be a party, not just a person who was speaking at the hearing? Is that what
she
said?
Yeah, she was, as far as I can tell, she was asking for a contested custody, a contested placement hearing. That's what she asked for. And the court simply said, thank you. And the department and the guardian ad litem withheld from the court relevant information about AB's desire to stay with my client on July 13th. Was that consistent with due process? Why didn't the court know that AB said strongly, I want to stay with KL?
The information you're talking about is that facts? Is that
what yes, you're yes.
Which is not in the record of this case at that point?
No, I didn't get that until...
I'm just asking why you said it was withheld.
It was withheld because it is in the record later on.
Later on.
And it says it was sent at the time it was sent. So clearly
May.
Yeah, about 3 weeks before the July 13th hearing.
So your position is that there was a duty for those individuals to share that facts with the court? I'm statute.
Yeah, yes, yes. I think it was a violation of due process not to give the court, it's also a violation of the duty of the guardian ad litem to not to give the court information when the child disagrees with the guardian ad litem's proposal for placement. There was a clear violation of the guardian ad litem statute.
Was the court informed that there was a, it looks like there may have been a plan to have the child sent to New Hampshire, and then, and if people had been told, KL and the child, AB, had been told that this was for a couple weeks.
Yes.
But then to extend the time while they were there and keep her there. Was the court informed of that?
The court was not informed of that prior to the AB being sent to out of state. Whether the guardian ad litem's letter to the court regarding travel documents could be interpreted as saying we are going to do this, but all I can say is I don't see how that can possibly substitute for the kind of hearing where the court considers not just the department's position, but also the position of someone who is opposing the department. So that's what I wanted to say about that. But what about the April 3rd order and the July 31st order, each of which was clearly erroneous? You know, on August 23rd, when I asked to see the court file, where I would have discovered those errors, my motion was denied without even courtesy of a hearing. Can this court simply ignore the adverse impact of these errors on my client's family? My client is not only Hanai mother to AB, she is the birth mother of AB's half-sister, TL. And the three of them living together met the definition of family under HRS section 587A4. My client is fighting on behalf of her daughter, as well as herself and AB. TL will remain AB's sister if KL adopts AB. If the great aunt and great uncle adopt AB, TL loses that relationship. While this case was on appeal, the family court held 4 days of trial on the two adoption petitions, and the judge has announced her intention to issue her decision next week on June 27th without waiting to hear from this court. Now, this is what I said.
I'm sorry, counsel, could you repeat that?
Yeah.
I said, while this case was on appeal.
Is that in the record of this case?
It is in the two adoption cases are in the record because they were discussed at the November 6th hearing. The court's statement that it's going to make that decision.
The record shows that the adoption cases have not yet been ruled out.
Right. Yes. Right. But I will inform the court on my honor as an advocate that this is what the judge has said she will do.
But the indication just is that she intends to rule on this case on June 27th.
She intends to rule on the two adoption petitions before this court issues its decision, which is I am challenging, among other things, I should follow my argument.
Have you moved for a stay on those adoption cases?
Jumping ahead to the end, is there any dispute that finding of fact G in the April 3rd, 2017 order was not supported by the record? And didn't that error void the granting of permanent custody to the department, depriving it of the authority to file an adoption petition on behalf of the great aunt and great uncle? Is there any dispute that the findings of fact in the July 31st, 2017 order were contradictory and that the change of placement to out of state was not supported by the record? Is there any dispute that the guardian ad litem and the department suppressed the May 16th, 2017 facts from the therapist and then stood silently by on July 13th while my client pleaded for protection for her family? Abuses thrive in secrecy. If these errors cannot be reviewed on direct appeal, this court should reconsider granting the petition for mandamus that I filed as soon as I was aware of the error in the April 3rd, 2017 order. I would really like you to reopen that mandamus and order that the lower court return AB to my client and order that the adoption by my client be put forward.
What do you seek at this point?
That's what I'm seeking. I'm seeking a peremptory order from this court, bring AB back, grant the adoption by my client.
There hasn't been an order
I beg your
pardon? There hasn't been an order of adoption yet, right?
No, but...
How can we grant an order of adoption when there hasn't been one entered?
No, but my client's the only viable, only legitimate option. My client, if my client has a superior claim to custody pursuant to HRS Section 57146A, nobody else gets ahead of her to adopt.
Well,
but
you know,
it's still a matter of discretion, correct?
That, and the it's, five of you have discretion to do what is right in any particular case where justice so requires.
I would say we should do that without information about the current circumstances involving this child, because our record is essentially 2 years old, although it's been supplemented this summer.
Yes, because the current circumstances regarding this child have nothing to do with the rights involved here. The current circumstances...
Are you saying that the child's best interests have nothing to do with anything at this point? Is that what you're arguing?
I am arguing that the child's best interests can only be served by following the law, but not by ignoring the law, and that the...
Well, let's assume that the law is clarified, that as a Hanai relative, that there is a recognition of the standing... opportunity, there's recognition of a equivalence to a certain extent with the relative, and that there isn't a preference for relatives in this situation, right? It's not an emergency, and therefore there wouldn't be any preference necessarily for a relative in the sense of the family. So with that clarification, on remand, isn't there going to be a hearing in which the opportunity for your client to fully present the facts in a way that recognizes the legitimacy of her claim in this adoption would take place?
Well, there are three things I want to clarify. One is we're not claiming merely to be a Hanai relative. We are claiming to be a Hanai mother, and we are saying that a Hanai mother stands in the same shoes as a biological mother, which means that in the absence of a hearing in which the burden is on the state to take away those parental rights, my client has a parental right.
Well, let's make that assumption. And
second point, as a resource caregiver, even leaving aside Hanai mother, as a resource caregiver, did she have standing to ask for an hearing on contested custody under AS? And if so, was her oral presentation a sufficient presentation to trigger the court's duty to do that? And the third one was going back to that March 10th hearing, the April 3rd order, was that in fact void, and all of the petitions, everything following after that was void because that order was not properly entered, and my client should have been allowed at that point to take custody instead of the department. I am saying that this court should say that my client always had custody, that the order transferring custody to the department was void, that all of the decisions made by the family court were in violation of my client's right as a mother. Now, if you don't...
I'm sorry, can I ask a question?
Yes.
You're saying we should do that without any input whatsoever as to the current status of this child, her wishes, her current condition, any input whatsoever?
Absolutely, because the question is, what does the rule of law mean?
Okay, let's talk about that. You're saying you want your client, KL, to be, because she's the Hanai mother, she's the mother.
Yes.
And in order to remove her, the Department of Human Services has to institute termination of parental rights case.
That's
actions.
What I'm arguing
so,
for.
And you said it's about the rule of law. What statute does that, are you citing for that?
I'm looking at the Hawaii Constitution, which is supposed to respect the cultural practices of Native Hawaiians, and I'm looking at the definitions in 587A4, and I'm looking at Morrissey versus Brewer and the other authorities that I cited regarding the due process issue. It's true my client was not the biological mother, but when she was recognized as not just Hanai relative, but relative, and when the evidence is that she's mother, I think that you're going to have to say whether that means anything in the eyes of the law of Hawaii or whether it means nothing in the laws of the eyes of Hawaii. I can't answer that question. But I can say,
if we conclude a family court erroneously transferred custody or allowed a child to be relocated, we would be establishing a bright line rule that whatever the record about that child, without any input whatsoever about their current condition or the possible impact of relocation on that child, there would be a bright line rule that would be immediately ordered to be returned to where we believe they should have been.
No, only if the claimant, the petitioner, happens to be Hanai mother, as well as thoroughly put in the record as could be in this case. There's nothing in the record that indicates my client was unfit. Everything in the record indicates my client was appropriate. And with respect to whether a resource caregiver has standing to ask for a hearing on change of placement, I agree that would be something that wouldn't override the ordinary procedure. Might go back and have a hearing. It wouldn't really do much good in this case, but it might provide guidance in the future, right?
Why didn't 57146, the de facto custody provision, wasn't that applied in this case?
Why wasn't the question asked at the March 10th hearing? At the March 10th hearing, the Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General, and the guardian ad litem, they did not ask that question. If my client was there in court, my client would have been aware if they had said, if the question had been asked of either the guardian ad litem or the social worker, is there somebody who's currently available, willing, able, and proper to take custody? Whatever the answer was from the social worker, my client would have stood up and said, hey, here I am. It's because it's impossible to look at this without coming to the conclusion that actions were taken to exclude my client from any consideration as a potential adoptive parent or placement without any record to support that. And you ask me, well, maybe there was some correspondence between the guardian ad litem or some other indication that this was a change of plan. There was no change to the permanent plan. These statutes are written to guide and control the exercise of the court's discretion. But you look at the two orders, and they don't match the record. The July 13th order is internally contradictory. How do you say the AB is doing fine with my client, but she has to be sent out of state? The law was not followed. And this is what I said. This is not a new argument.
Could you please point out again where in the record was it that your client was referred to by the state as Hanai parent?
On September the 7th. The transcript of September 7th, docket 27. The Attorney General's statement is at page 9, lines.
Okay,
nine,
thank you.
Yeah, it's on page 9, lines 9 to 11. With regard to the case law which is cited, the department looks at both as relatives, and then the guardian ad litem on the same page, 19 to 21. It has been acknowledged that the former caregiver was a Hanai relative. That's been acknowledged by the department and is not being disputed. In that regard, absent any authority otherwise, she stands in the same shoes as blood relatives. And then we have...
Which page are you on, Mr.
Stanton? I'm on page 9 of the transcript of September the 7th.
Thank you.
And then... Then on page 10, at the bottom of the page lines 23 to 25, that's where the judge says it's good to know AB has relatives, whether blood or not, Hanai or not, that all love her and want what's in her best interests. So there was never any argument that my client was standing in the same shoes as a blood relative. The only argument is, does the status of mother confer a higher standard? And, to me it seems obvious, if there's any strength at all to the Hawaii Constitution and the guarantee of respect for cultural practices, you have to respect the parental relationship, that's the most important relationship.
Well, speaking of which, the AB had a mother, and she was still her mother, and they didn't move to terminate parental rights till 2015. And she was, so she started living with KL after 2015, right?
As you.
So, and they didn't terminate the mother's parental rights till a date, later date. So are you saying that although the mother's parental rights weren't terminated, so she had a mother, she should be, there should be two mothers?
On March 10th of 2017, the biological mother's rights were terminated. That is the hearing at which there was a failure to ask, is there a family prepared to take this child? That is the point where my client, as Hanai mother and as a person, the November 2nd plan said, and under the 57146A, I'm not saying that there would be two mothers. I'm saying that when the mother, when the biological mother's parental rights were terminated, the existing relationship, which, Justice Nakayama, goes back to when AB was 3 years old, according to my client's statement to the court on July the 13th. That is the point. At the point where the court said, we're going to give custody to the department, they should have, the law required that they give custody to my client, not to the department, because my client was had a superior claim to the department, and the only reason my client didn't assert that claim is because the record was not made that would have alerted her that she should speak up. Now, I can't explain why the guardian ad litem and the I can't explain why the guardian ad litem and the deputy attorney general did all these things.
Well, Mr. Steinberg, why wouldn't you then feel that, given the fact that the motion to intervene was found by the ICA to have been improperly denied, why wouldn't you feel now that your client can intervene that you wouldn't be able to make that argument below?
Because what the judge did, and that's in the November 6th, 27th, in the November 6th, 2017 transcript, the judge said that the essentially all of the child protection proceedings were moot because she was going to hold the adoption trials. So that's on page 12. This is docket 28, page 12.
So your concern is that some evidence will not be considered on remand that should be considered. Is that correct?
My concern is that the court, the family court continues to treat this entire proceeding as moot, and that the only thing that matters is the decision on the two adoption petitions. And my point is that if my argument about the invalidity of that April 3rd order is correct, the judge should not be even allowed to consider the adoption petition filed by the department because the department wrongly got custody. So I'm saying that
your argument then is that if there is a Hanai parent, at the time the rights of the biological parents are terminated, the department is required to that the only option then is for custody, parental rights to be given to the Hanai parent in the child welfare case.
No, Justice McKenna, not the department, the court. The court.
The court must then just automatically at that point transfer custody.
The court does not necessarily have to do that if there are if the department can point out reasons why, on the record, it shouldn't be. But it is up to the department to come forward and say, even though this person, and whether Hanai mother or not, if it's a person who has a claim under that statutory section, that should be something that the court respects, that should be something the department respects, and that should be something that needs to be dealt with before there's just a rubber stamp of the order. And that all that happened here, there's no indication that the judge ever exercised discretion. In fact, how can you say on July 13th the court exercised discretion when the judge didn't have information about AB's attitude? If you can't exercise discretion, if you don't have the facts. I guess I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Well, thank you, Mr. Thank you. Mr. Souter, your honor.
May it please the court, my name is Ian Souta. I am a Deputy Attorney General appearing on behalf of the Department of Human Services. This case presents issues of unusual delicacy that balance the interests of the child, parents, and appellant with the fundamental purposes of the Child Protective Act. The law acknowledges the importance of preserving the family home, as well as the benefits that relatives such as a Hanai relative can supply in providing a safe and alternative placement for children in foster care.
At the time of the March 17 termination, the court adopted the permanent plan of November 1, 2016. It appears that that plan did indicate that KL was a safe home and the child was bonded to KL, and KL was willing to adopt, wanted to adopt AB. Why was there this transfer to the great aunt, pulling the child away from her family that she was living with and her own sister?
I understand your concerns, and it was.
Did the department think that they had to give it to? A blood relative, the mother's blood relative in New Hampshire? I'm very confused. I know that there had been the October 2016 Ohana conference, and the relatives in the mainland were indicating they wanted to take the child, but why the switch? I'm very confused.
Certainly. It was a very difficult decision, and it wasn't based purely on a blood relative preference for the current placement over in New
Hampshire. Well, there's nothing in the record to show why the judge made this decision.
In that regard, maybe I could ask you to focus on finding of fact G in this order awarding permanent custody, where it says no such substitute family is available. Mm-hmm. Was that part of the analysis, that there was a determination that no substitute family was available when you had already established in the permanent plan that the relationship with the Hanai mother was sufficient to recommend that be the placement?
It's not a part of the analysis under a termination of parental rights proceeding under the Child Protective Act. And it certainly wasn't part of the department's decision making when it decided to move the child to the relatives on the mainland.
Well, actually, she was just supposed to be there on a visit, and then poof, she's gone. I you know, that's the problematic part for me, honestly, that she's just supposed to be there on a visit to relatives in New Hampshire, and then all of a sudden she's not coming back.
Certainly,
finish the answer, and then can you answer Justice McKenna's question, which is, what is the explanation?
Okay.
In the record.
The department is obligated to determine what is the best interest of the child and determine what placement is in accord with that best interest. In the beginning of 2017, and this is part of the record and is most clearly explained by a letter from the child's therapist, who had been her therapist since 2016, and a letter dated August 31st, 2017. It was a letter that explained the circumstances regarding the supervised visits between the appellant and the child
Said August of 17. I thought we were trying to explain the decision made back in March of 17.
Right. Unfortunately, prior to the decision leading up to change that placement, the record doesn't fully explain the rationale.
That looks to me that there's a lot of discussions occurring between the guardian ad litem and the social worker, and the Hanai family is completely excluded from it and doesn't even know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So, what my concern is, Where is the court's explanation for this change and why this was in the child's best interest?
With what's in the record, I don't believe that there's an explanation from the court.
And I also have a question. I'm not sure these forms that you use. You know, 58, the form says on the termination order, it says pursuant to 587A33, and it's finding E says, and I assume it's supposed to be based on 587A33A2. The law says it's not reasonably foreseeable that the child's parent whose rights are subject to termination will become willing and able to provide the child with a safe family home. Yet this form order, I am assuming this is a form order, says there is clear and convincing evidence that the child's family is not presently willing and able to provide the child with a safe family home. How is that even correct?
The form itself is not as...
It doesn't comply with the law. You had family that was able to provide her with a safe family home. Yes.
The form does not comply with the law.
The form is not completely... It doesn't track the law in a clear and concise way, the way that 587A is written out and the findings that are required.
Have you changed the form since?
Yes, we have.
So if the court, however, was alerted to the fact that the child was in a safe family home, mm-hmm. bonded with her Hanai mom, mm-hmm. and didn't want to leave, right? Or the court was not informed that she didn't want to leave?
No, I believe the court was informed.
If the court was informed, it's all off the record, right?
Right?
In other words, there's a lot of off-the-record discussions occurring that the Hanai mom is not aware of.
Right.
Saying that she had no right to intervene and to review the understand what was going on.
Well, she needed to follow a process in order to intervene because
she moved to intervene and you opposed it.
We did oppose it.
Twice.
That's right.
And you also opposed the great aunt's motion to intervene.
We did because...
Is that just standard? You just oppose... Perhaps the great aunt is a little bit different, but this was the Hanai mother, mm-hmm. Had been raising the child for almost a year and a half, living with the child, mm-hmm. and you don't allow her to intervene. Well, don't allow her to understand what's going on.
Well, I don't believe that's exactly the case.
Was she told when the child was removed that the child was just going to end up staying in New Hampshire? It looks like there was a plan in place to just extend the stay indefinitely, and the child didn't even know that. Is this how the department operates, or was the department opposed to this?
Your Honor, again, the record doesn't support what steps were taken to apprise appellant the child of
Did the child department know that the child was just going to be left in New Hampshire, that this was just a ruse to get her there? Did the department know that and countenance that?
Well, the department indicated in its letter dated March 15, 2017, that the current placement in New Hampshire was willing to adopt, which had been that placement.
That's not the question.
Well, did you know there are so many questions?
I'm sorry.
That he hasn't been allowed to finish his answers on.
Okay.
I would like you to go back to the question of why you folks opposed the intervention by both parties, and feel free to answer it.
Okay. These cases rely on a very delicate balance between who should be allowed in, who should be allowed to say and have a position on what is in the best interests of the child, because the focus in these cases is supposed to be on first and foremost safety of the child, as well as focusing on reunification of the child with their family. And if that can't occur, then the focus is on trying to achieve timely permanency for them. Going first to the motion to intervene by the current placement, at that time, the department was working on reunification. intervening at that time would have been, one, premature because the focus would
I'm sorry, we're talking about after March 2017. Termination already occurred, right? Okay. Was occurring at that time, okay. Right?
Right, right.
So when July, when you, the child was, or June, when the child was sent, did the department know that that was going to be, that was, there was a plan to just keep her there?
That seems to be, from the record, that was the department's intention.
Tell the child? And don't tell the Hanai mom that that's, and the Hanai family here, that that's what's going to happen so that they can assert their interests or rights?
Well, the appellant was able to assert her position and by speaking. By not,
that's exactly Mr. Steinberg's point.
That's right.
Is it error for the court not to grant a hearing at that point to her as a Hanai mother?
No, because the Child Protective Act carefully prescribes those rights that are afforded to people who are not the parents, and what rights are afforded to the relatives.
Are you now conceding that she was not? Are you now saying that she was not a Hanai mom?
No, I'm not. I'm not here to contest.
She could be a resource parent as well as a Hanai mom, right?
She could.
Wouldn't a Hanai mom have more rights than a resource parent?
The whatever rights a resource parent, a Hanai relative, a blood relative, a grandparent may have, would be prescribed under this statute. And this statute carefully distinguishes the designation of what constitutes a family for purposes of these cases and what constitutes a relative for purposes of these cases.
Then why is there a definition of Hanai?
Well, I believe that that does get to Mr. Steinberg's point about the legislatures and this court's recognition of Hawaiian traditions, such as the tradition of having Hanai parents. So their, you know, inclusion of that definition into the statute is relevant and is a benefit, really, to the child and to the department, because the benefits that the department has and the benefits that a relative has are significant, even though they don't rise to the level of the same rights that a parent may have.
Mr. Tsuda? Go ahead.
I'm sorry, you just said the Hanai parent doesn't have the same rights as a natural parent. Is that true?
No, that's right. They do not have the same rights. Well, for one, Hanai parent is not a designation that's defined under this statute. It's the terminology is a Hanai relative.
But we do have other definitions of parent under the law, right?
That's right.
And this is after the case in which we recognize de facto parentage, right?
That's right.
I mean, parentage is not just determined by how it's defined in 587. We have recognized intended parents, or, well, probably not under this appellate law, but we have talked about psychological parentage.
Mm-hmm. And the family court, in recognizing all these different types of relationships that may have as much significance as the parent-child relation, as the traditional parent-child relationship, affords the statute affords the family court that ability to make them parties if they feel that it's in
the. How can the family court make a fully informed decision if a Hanai parent is or de facto parent is denied the right to be fully heard and to be aware of what is going on?
Well,
why keep interested people in the dark?
Well, I'm not here today to support the proposition that people such as resource caregivers and those who are crucial parts of these cases, that they should be kept in the dark. But the argument today is that there needs to be that careful balance between the extent to which we provide those rights to people who are not legal custodians and those rights to
we're talking about a specific case. I understand the concern. You know, there are some resource families that have sure. never have any intention of becoming an adoptive parent.
Sure.
They're just there for temporary purposes.
Sure.
But we're talking about this case.
That's right.
Mr. Tsuda, though, you're at the hearing in which KL attempts to be notified that there's a discussion about what's going to happen with this child and tries to, and is allowed to speak but is not allowed to speak as a party. That was the termination of parental rights case, right? Or was that a...
That, I believe that was the hearing where the court had continued permanent custody of the child. The
okay.
hearing prior to,
okay.
which was the first order that I believe appellant appealed.
But unbeknownst to, but the permanent plan was changing. Although at the time of termination in March, it appears that the permanent plan may have been for KL to be able to pursue adoption. Somewhere along the line, it changed after that.
That's right.
Without any notification that it was changing.
Well, Your Honor, and I understand the frustration because, unfortunately, the record doesn't detail the extent to which, if any, that was explained to appellant. Or to the court. And so what I have to rely on, and what we rely on in the record, was that letter going back from the child's therapist back in August of 2017 that retroactively discussed what the concerns were for appellant in the beginning of 2017 that led up to the department's decision that it
and was that and but by March the appellant was KL was already saying, you know, we had some issues but she's doing much better and the child was doing much better mm-hmm. at school and mm-hmm. I mean, you know, there are issues, especially when the father had just left mm-hmm. and you know, I mean, a child is going to act out, and children do act out once in a while, and it's tough for parents. You know, any parent needs a break once in a while. And that's going to be a reason to pull a child because the parent said, I just need a little bit of time?
That is a good point, going back to this decision, by no means was it a easy decision. Is I believe it was quite difficult.
The decision in March, there's nothing in the record to support it.
The decision in March was the decision regarding
the department.
That was the July decision, I believe. The July
27th.
I believe that.
July was to Tottenham's first day on the mainland.
Well, I don't believe there were any findings in the order terminating parental rights back in March. That
yes, I'm trying to understand is you conceded a lot of things that were problematic in this record. Are you here today to support the actions of the trial court, or would you concede some of them were erroneous and need to be addressed by this court?
I believe that the Intermediate Court of Appeals decision carefully balance those interests and balance those concerns that were presented.
Because they didn't acknowledge her status as a non-mom. Why wasn't that here?
Because we go back to what was provided by the statute and the circumstances under which a person is recognized as a Hanai. In the statute, they are given status as a relative, which in and of itself gives a Hanai relatives a significant amount of rights. The department is obligated to seek them out when the child is removed from the family and taken into foster custody.
And, you know, this is even after NRAAS, right?
That's right.
Where we had already held that once a child is bonded, you don't pull a child for an apparent, you know, a blood relative.
Right. And I'm not here to say that this was a purely relative preference placement. I'm here to say it's exactly the opposite. Understanding the concerns that leading up to the actual change of placement, the record wasn't fully explained. But relying on what is in the record and relying on the explanation, even though it was done after the fact, paints a picture.
The August 17th letter and use that to understand what the court did previously. Is that kind of your argument? I'm trying to understand.
It's the best indication of what we can understand, what we know that the Department of Human Services was considering at the time of the removal.
Could I ask you a question about that particular point you're making?
Certainly.
That at the March hearing, the March 10th hearing, to understand the decision of the court, we need to look at the subsequent letter in August, because I had thought you were going to mention the input of the guardian ad litem The guardian ad litem seems to have opposed the adoption of AB by KL by the time there was the March 10th hearing. But is it your view that the court didn't take into consideration at all the input of the guardian ad litem? Because I wanted to ask you what the basis was of the opposition from the guardian ad litem.
No, that's not what I mean to say. With regards to the March order, it was focused solely on whether or not the parental rights of the child's parents, legal custodians, should be terminated, and whether or not the permanent plan that diverts from reunification and goes towards an alternative permanency is in the child's best interest. That was the focus of.
And you're saying that the court didn't consider the input of the guardian ad litem at that point?
I don't know what the family court considered or didn't consider, but with regards to whether or not it was what was necessary to make a ruling on a motion brought under those circumstances, the focus was purely on the parents and purely on whether or not the goal itself, as opposed to a specific placement, a specific individual. To execute that alternative permanency goal, that was the focus of that.
Isn't there a guardian ad litem position to provide information on that issue?
Certainly, yeah. Certainly.
What is the guardian ad litem? The guardian ad litem is not supposed to consider the child's preferences. No. Is not supposed to inform the court what the child wants.
I believe we all are under that obligation, the guardian ad litem as well as the department. Well,
and was the guardian? Yeah, did the guardian ad litem tell the judge that the child wanted to stay?
I don't believe that's in the record.
When was the permanent plan? When was the November 1, 2016 permanent plan changed?
Well,
you would concede that the November 1, 2016 permanent plan did envision KL pursuing adoption.
That's right.
And that was attached to the March 2017 termination order.
That's right.
So at that time, according to the documents, it was supposed to be KL being able to pursue adoption.
It's the permanent plan requires request an explanation of the circumstances regarding the child as well as the overarching and what is available at the time that the plan is adopted to achieve that goal. But these goals, I think in Mr. Steinberg's time here, I think the court recognized that these things can change. And
so what changed?
The change was the concerns that the therapist had and then by the therapist, the department had adopted with regards to the appellant's ability to handle the child long term, to be able to deal with the behaviors of the child that
yet the department then resisted a hearing to see, even though the KL had come in and said things are great now, resisted a hearing to flush out those issues.
Well, at the time,
you had already made up your mind that the child was going to stay in New Hampshire, and that's it. You had a plan in place.
I believe so, and the reason for not allowing appellant an opportunity to have that hearing is because at that time she wasn't a party to this case. She had rights to participate in the proceeding to the extent that they were afforded under her status as a resource caregiver.
Mr. Suter, can I ask you what your position is with respect to the remand, and to what extent, if at all, do you consider that the proceedings on remand will be relevant to the adoption?
Well, the ICA already remanded at least half of appellant's appeal regarding the motion for reconsideration.
Would that all be moot if the adoption decision is made next week or June 27th or whatever the date? Isn't that all moot?
I don't know that the family court is inclined to make an order on the competing adoption petitions, it may be just that they would be able to make the findings as to considering both positions and considering everything that's before them, make a finding without actually making an order, because this appeal certainly affects their jurisdiction to make a final order.
Well, can you explain that? You said it. This appeal affects their jurisdiction, but more specifically, to what extent would KL have the opportunity to participate in the adoption proceedings, given the nature of the remand?
In the adoptions proceedings, well, this appeal derives itself solely from the FCS case, solely from the Child Protective Act case. So the remand, while I believe it should be considered, and they should be coordinated in the sense that there shouldn't be differing orders and decisions, ultimately, the child's ability and appellant's ability to fully participate in the competing adoption cases has never been an issue. I believe she had a full opportunity to participate in those proceedings with counsel, being able to fully express her position with the benefit of an advocate, discussing matters such as placement and whether or not it would be in the child's best interest to return back to live with the appellant.
What's your response to Mr. Steinberg's argument that if this court concludes there were significant errors made in terms of, for example, a denial of a hearing based on KL's denied status, that this court should order that AB be returned to KL's custody forthwith? What's your response to that?
I believe that a decision like that would be unwise. I believe that I understand that 2 years have passed since the change of placement. A lot can change in 2 years. If this court, based on the facts that it has presented before it today and the record it has today, is to make a decision like that, it's very likely to miss something that is particularly germane to a decision that is going to affect the child. Minimization of multiple placement changes is something that the department strives for, and I don't think that this court will have the benefit of a full and complete record to be able to make that decision. And if
I'm sorry, you said that the department strives for minimization of what?
Multiple moves in placement. Basically, it's a long way to say
what they did here. They strive to minimize what they did here.
That's right. Ultimately, it's a difficult decision. Ultimately, if the department believes in its best interest that the child should be moved, I mean, that has to take precedent over a strict adherence to
not. So the department makes the decision without giving full information to the court. Basically, is that your argument?
No, that's
the court didn't know that the child wanted to stay. The court didn't know that the child was being transported to New Hampshire on a pretense with a plan to keep her there without coming back.
Well, on that point, I disagree. I go back to the
So the court knew that?
Well, the court knew that the DHS, the department, wanted the New Hampshire relatives to adopt and that a trip over there would be helpful, and that was in March. That letter was dated in March of 2017. So I don't think it's in the record, maybe not fully flush out the rationale for that, but certainly it knew of the department.
Because I thought the court had scheduled a further hearing, and I'm a little bit confused because I thought that the court thought that the child was coming back once.
That I'm not sure of.
Your statement is the record suggests that DHS had already made its views.
That's right.
Was it in front of the judge that AB wanted to remain here in Hawaii when she made her decision in July? based on your knowledge of this record?
That I don't know. I don't believe so. I don't believe so.
And was the court notified in November that the child had indicated that she wanted to come back to her attorney?
In November of 2017?
Yes.
I don't know the veracity of that.
You're saying
statement.
That the attorney is made a misrepresentation?
Well, it's... I'm certainly not saying that. And if there was any misrepresentation... I see that my time is up.
No, please respond.
Okay. I'm not saying that the attorney had misrepresented anything to that nature, but what I am saying is that people can have different perceptions about how a relationship is going, what an interaction is like, what the intentions of a child is. That's why we have such contested hearings on this standard of what the best interest of the child is. And you know, I don't mean to say that there was any willful representation or knowing. But in looking at what we have in the record, we see that there was some indication by the professional that there was a concern, not only leading up to the removal, but the continued actions and interactions between the child and appellant.
And there was concern on the other side, too.
There was concern on the other side.
Right. So, you know, goes both ways, right?
It does. It does.
Mr. Stood, anything further for the court at this time?
I didn't fully get to address the issue of whether or not a Hanai status alone should be afforded those rights, but I just caution the court today in making a ruling under these circumstances. The relationship that appellant discusses with the child was something that was created when the department took foster custody of the child. It wasn't that the child had been residing with appellant prior to removal. It wasn't an existing family unit. These circumstances were created.
Are you contesting that she was are you putting aside Hanai relative, because relative is pretty expansive, Hanai parent, are you contesting that? Because according to the record, it doesn't appear to have been contested at the time.
No.
Okay, so you're conceding that she was a Hanai parent. I do have a question. What is the department's policy with respect to separating siblings?
The department's policy and directive in its rules and procedures are to try and maintain those connections whenever possible.
Is that happening here? Did that happen here?
It's certainly not a desirable situation that their contact is limited to modes of technology, video conferencing, phone calls.
And the record reflects that they have a good relationship, correct, in regular contact?
With the child, yes. I agree.
Does the department consider the effects on the child that's left behind, the sibling that's left behind, when it makes its recommendations? I'm just wondering.
The department should, and I believe that even outside of this case, I've been in enough cases where I've had social workers who have recognized a full battery of considerations such as that connection and the effect that displacement will have on the child and family members. So I would say yes, they do.
Very well, anything further at this time?
No, Your Honor. I thank you for your time.
Thank you. How much time is remaining?
46 seconds.
Oh, I allow Mr. Suda to go over, so I'll give you some additional time for your rebuttal.
Yes, as quickly as possible. The March 10th hearing did not just terminate rights, it granted custody. And that's what we're talking about, who got the custody. The delicate balance Mr. Tsuda says the department does, that's a violation of AES. It is the court that is supposed to do the balancing, not the department. What's going on here? And what I said to the court in November, although you have said that the department's decisions on change of placement are reviewable, The HELO Office of the Department of Human Resources does not want its decisions reviewed. And you heard Mr. Tsuda saying, the department decides this, the department decides that. But it's the court that's supposed to decide that, not the department. There was no delicate balance by the court. The court simply did what the department wanted. There's nothing in the record to support what was done. You know, I'm not a family law lawyer. I don't think I made many friends in the HELO family court with the way I took this case on. But as God is my witness, wrong was done to my client. The family, the definition of family, it includes any person, each person residing in the dwelling unit, and any other person with legal or physical custody or guardianship of the child. This was a family. This was not just a resource placement. This was a family. You can't talk about the best interests of a child if you don't respect the rights of the child's family. You can't take away parental rights because you think it's in the best interest of the child to be with somebody else. Parental rights are very important. All the rights that are associated with kind of with love and not with commercial considerations, they go far deeper into people's hearts. And, you know, I'm from Wisconsin. I remember the hullabaloo about cases involving guardianships, which is not exactly like this, but the same thing. You got, you know, the Sharon Kowalski case. Karen Thompson came through Madison many times pleading for help before she was finally able to establish that guardianship. This is about human rights. This is about parental rights. It's not
well,
about
getting back to the way the rights are exercised at this hearing, to what extent is it your understanding the participation of the guardian ad litem made a difference?
The guardian ad litem did the dirty. She had a duty to tell the judge that, AB didn't want to leave. She hid that. The guardian ad litem did the dirty in this.
AB had an attorney, right?
AB, yes.
She had an attorney herself.
No, she did not have an attorney until after I moved that the court appoint an attorney.
Appoint yourself.
Well, I actually wanted them to appoint me or somebody who would work with me. But the court, although denying the motion to intervene, did appoint an attorney, as I had requested, but that was after the July 13th hearing. And, you know, if this court doesn't do anything to stop what's going on in the HELO family court, the result is a foregone conclusion. My client and her daughter, TL, will be completely out of this relationship, and there'll be nothing anyone else can do. Nothing can be done about this if this court doesn't intervene, because what's going on in the HELO family court is dirty. Thank you very much.
Thank you to our attorneys for their arguments. Our report will take the time to hear.
This honorable Supreme Court.